He is before all things, and in him all things hold together, as St. Paul put it. When we draw near God, and only then, do we find our place in relation to the world. It is like going up the spoke of a wheel to the center. And when nearest him, we find ourselves closest to everything else he's made. Here is communion. In God's presence, we discover ourselves able to love one another, able to be vessels of heroic love, even toward our enemies, even unto death. We find all creation in harmony around us, as responsive and fruitful as the garden was to Adam and Eve. The peace that passes understanding informs our every thought. All this sounds pretty good, right? So why are we doing such a crummy job of it? Why are we modern Christians so undistinguishable from the world? Why are our rates of dysfunction and heartbreak just as high? Why don't we stand out in virtue and joy? Does anyone ever say we know that they are his disciples because they love one another? How come Christians who lived in times of bloody persecution were so heroic, while we who live in safety are fretful and pudgy? How could the earlier saints pray constantly, while our minds dawdle over trivialities? How could they fast so valiantly, and we feel deprived if there's no cookie at the end of the in-flight meal? How could the martyrs forgive their torturers, but my friend's success makes me pouty? What did previous generations of Christians know that we don't? That's what this book is about. Chapter 2, A Challenging Answer. A modern Christian may well feel perplexed by the questions at the end of the last chapter. We think, but we know what the answer has to be. Jesus is the answer. So we try each day better to love and follow him. And yet the life we lead would not be readily described as victorious. To tell the truth, we don't even attempt anything that strenuous. We know we can't do it. So we do the best we can, getting by, sometimes befuddled and disappointed, turning to God for consolation. This spiritual cycle was depicted in a devotional story that came my way by email. In it, a young mom was reflecting on her tendency to grump and gripe, such that one day even her toddler said he didn't want to be around her. "I wish I could make a whole life resolution to do better," she said, but she knew that she would inevitably fail. "I'll make lots of bad choices," she said. "I'll sin a lot more. My heart is heavy with this reality." Then, turning to the hymn, "And Can It Be?", she quoted the line, "No condemnation now I dread." "Because grace has been poured out on us," she explained, "we no longer have to feel burdened by our inevitable faults. We can go on trying and failing and forgiven, comforted by the limitless nature of God's grace." Most of us modern-day Christians will nod at this story. It sounds so right and so reassuring. But let's imagine that we could hand this email to a Christian of another era, perhaps from the 5th or 6th century, living in the Middle East. We'll call her Anna. As she reads over this anecdote, she's perplexed by the sudden turn at the end. Plenty of it sounds familiar. Being grumpy, having failings, wanting to do better. She has 3 kids herself and a husband who runs a busy olive press. Some of these stresses are timeless. But how does "No condemnation now I dread" address that situation? She wants real help to change, not just consolation. And she expects that real help through Jesus' promise of the Holy Spirit. For her, this story omits that practical hope and trails off in anticlimax. One thing about the anecdote particularly perplexes Anna. Why is this mother mainly concerned with condemnation? For Anna, the problem is not so much the final reward of sin, but the natural daily result of it, the way it distances her from God. Her whole life is a journey toward union with God. And nettling daily failures are like rocks in the path, hindering her from drawing closer to this great love. Sins are all the little actions and inactions that serve our selfish impulses, and that can be so hard to resist, even ahead of time, hard to detect. Anna gets frustrated with these failures, not mostly because they earn